and welcome to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Gulston. Now, this is the show for honest conversations, raw conversations sometimes about the hurts that we suffer in life and how we get ourselves past them. And, you know, we're talking to people from all around the world. And we have another fabulous guest with us today, Christina Jones. And Mark, I think you know Christina quite well, so I'll let you do a really proper introduction to her. I think she's doing some wonderful work that you're both going to tell us about.
Yes, I was introduced to Christina by actually the founder of an accelerator of startups. And when he feels you have a chance of being successful, he'll invest. So Christine is hoping that he will invest in her startup, Guardian Lane. And he introduced her to me because he knew that what she was up to was very much aligned to what matters most to me. And I'll let her talk about it, but briefly, Guardian Lane is a company that teaches young children how to deal with loss and grief, because it's all around them. You know, there's shootings, maybe their parents shield them from that. There's death in their family. There's death of their pets. There's divorce by their parents. There's suicides. You know, sadly, it's becoming more common that, you know, especially in high schools and universities, where, you know, almost every sizable one has a suicide or more per year. So I thought what Christina is doing is really necessary, and probably as necessary in the UK as it is in America. So welcome, Christina.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here, Christina. And so for children, it can be particularly difficult, can't it, when they suffer grief or loss. So how do you approach this with kids?
Yeah, so the thing with death and with children is, if they're particularly young, this is a very shocking experience for a child. And unfortunately, we live in a society where people don't like to talk about death. It's a very depressing, sad subject. And so what tends to happen with children is people don't talk to them enough about what has happened in their life. And so children tend to hide their grief, hold it in. And we all know that when you hold on to those feelings or have questions that are not answered, it can lead to some problematic behavior and outcomes. So knowing this, we at Guardian Lane and me, from my personal experience, wanted to help children just get it out, be able to have that conversation, be able to just release whatever they're feeling, but in a fun way that's relatable to them.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Can you elaborate on your personal experience? Because I think that will help us and our listeners understand why you're doing this, because, you know, before this, you can also share what you were doing as an entrepreneur and in business and why you decided to pivot.
Yeah. Okay. So when I was 7 years old, my father died from cancer. He had been sick a few years prior to his death, but nobody ever told me the outcome could possibly be him dying. And so when it happened, of course, it was a complete shock to me mentally, to me emotionally. And I unfortunately did not get the support that I needed to process it. It made me question, you know, if the rock, my foundation, could be removed from my life, what is life now? Like, what is this? And unfortunately, you know, my mom was grieving as well and had to kind of hold it in her mind, hold it together and move us forward. And even with my school, you know, they gave us a Christmas tree They told the student body that my father had died, but they didn't get me any emotional support. It was kind of like a month later, everything was back to normal. And what I can remember is they didn't introduce me to any other students who maybe had experienced a loss of any kind. So here I am, a second grader, thinking I'm alone in this experience. And I remember lessons, either it was like a historic lesson, and we're talking about, war, or we're talking about Father's Day or anything. I remember feeling so triggered throughout my whole school experience. I remember even like gripping my desk so that I wouldn't cry, knowing like no one knows what I'm thinking inside. Like, I'm so sad, I'm so hurt. And I don't think I ever told someone like, hey, I'm grieving. And it wasn't until I was around the age of 17 when I knew that I wanted to share a story, to see if there were any other kids around who also may be experiencing this. And I remember I found interesting ways to heal. Again, I was alone, so I had to find my own coping mechanisms. And so it was quirky stuff, like if the shower door popped open, which it would do all the time, I would say, oh, that's my dad coming to say hello. So I would have these kind of spiritual experiences that would help me, say, oh, he's here with me. He's always here with me. I remember this was a weird one. There was this gnat in the school. It was probably multiple gnats, but I always thought it was the same one. And I thought, oh, that's my dad following me. Like, I don't want to, squash it because that's my dad. And so those were the ways that I found it would help me feel better in those grief moments when no one was around. And so when I was 17, I knew that I wanted to write a book on this experience and teach other kids quirky ways that they can stay connected to whoever had died. And I remember I was in Los Angeles at the Santa Monica Pier. I was volunteering there. Underneath the pier, there's this aquatic center. I think it's still there. So if anyone has been to Los Angeles and has been to the Santa Monica Pier, they may know it. And as I was driving home, I wrote the whole book in my head. But by the time I got home, it had all disappeared. I had forgotten it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wish we lived in a day with the, cell phones, and I could have just recorded it. So I say that because that's going to bring us to current day in a moment. But I went on to have a career in advertising, storytelling. I still think that was a part of my grief journey. I was heavily in the arts, and I think this is a part of why I love what Guardian Lane does too, is it allowed me to express myself as another character, but to get those emotions out. And I think that was an essential part of my healing process, was doing theater, doing dance. It was that movement, that release of all those toxic toxins that were in my body. But I went on to become an entrepreneur. I started a company with my husband back in 20, was it 2014? We sold in 2019, and I loved the experience of coming up with something, a simple idea, and being able to scale it nationwide to help so many people. It was in the legal industry, and we were making legal services affordable. So having that experience of seeing something grow to such a massive scale, but at the same time, anytime we had a customer, we knew we were helping someone. So that experience was a game changer for me, and I knew I wanted to do it again, but I wanted to do it with something personal to me. And so, what was it? Back in 2019, I thought about that book. And I said, now I know how to write a book. Now I know how to find an editor, an illustrator. Like, let's get this done. And so, in 2020, I released a book called My Forever Guardian. And it was exactly what I wanted to do at the age of 17, which was teach children how within their daily world, within their daily life, they can pick up on little things to help them cope and heal. But then I got curious as the world was shutting down, 2020, everything's closing, all we're hearing about is death and grief. So I thought, well, what's available for kids now these days? Like, do they have an online place where they can go and talk to other kids who are grieving? And I was shocked that it was very much still rooted in in-person experiences. So grief centers, a therapist, meaning you had to get out of the house. This is 2020. Everything was closed. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, these kids are trapped in their house with nothing to help them release this stress. And I found for adults, though, there were many, many communities where they could connect, where they could share. But there was nothing for kids. And I remember looking over at my five-year-old at the time, and she's on her iPad, just making these fake YouTube videos, having a good old time. And I thought, wait a minute. If there are experts that are sitting at home trying to figure out what to do next, how come we can't put them into this iPad where my daughter and me as a mother can have access to help immediately? And that is where the whole idea where Guardian Lane came from.
Wow, that is such a great idea. And what a great story. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking it's not even just kids who do that with, you know, seeing something and saying, oh, that's my father or that's my mother. I was doing that at the age of 60 something when my mother passed, and a robin might come and join me on a country walk. And I'd say, oh, yeah, that's her spirit. You know, I think we all do that, don't we? It's a universal way of coping. Yeah. Fascinating, isn't it?
Transitioning that relationship into something that stays with you.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to share something. I wonder what you make of it, Christina. Empathy is really important to me. And lately, I can make an expression with my face, like what I just did. And I immediately remember my father making that expression.
Screwing your face up like a...
No, it's sort of like that or something. Not angry, but, you know, just whatever. Yeah. And when I make it, even just showing it to the two of you, I can feel what he might have been feeling underneath that face. You know, and I've been doing that with, you know, people who have passed, people who are still living, and it's weird. It's the body experience. It's like, or I'll take a certain posture, and when I take the posture, I can kind of feel what that person who has that posture might be feeling. So, anyway, it's just something I've been noticing more and more in my life. So, what do you make of that?
As you were saying it, I was thinking that's it personally, I think that is your memory, the things that you held on to about that person that in that moment when it was happening, when they were still alive, there was something about it that was meaningful to you. So the fact that now that they're not here, you're going back to those things that immediately makes you think of them.
Yeah, because when I think of that expression I just shared that my father would make, you know, I think as a child, I just noticed it. But having lived a pretty long life myself, when I do it, I can feel, oh, he was feeling frustrated with when he'd make that face. And that's not something I was necessarily aware of as a child. He was trying to do something and it was taking some effort. And it's almost like a hunger. Because something that I've noticed, I often give talks on suicide prevention, and I'll ask audiences, now, many of the audiences are entrepreneurs, and maybe that's different than other audiences. And I'll say, raise your hand if you can remember fewer than five times in your entire lifetime with your parents, but especially a dad, because often they're emotionally a little bit shut off. Raise your hand if you can remember fewer than five times when you and he were completely raw, vulnerable, and honest. And about 75% of the room usually raises their hand because they can't remember moments like that. You know, what they'll remember is, what'd you do? Oh, that's good. And, you know, and you'll report back the events of the day. But I think it's very common for many people to feel kind of a sadness. You know, I knew this person. Now, you didn't know your dad for that long. But, I knew this person for so many years, and I didn't really know them, and I didn't feel known by them.
It's interesting you say that. Now, I'll bring up a quick study that I did before I started Guardian Lane. I was just curious. I just wanted to learn from other people if this was an idea that they wanted, if they thought it would work. And so I interviewed 12 children, child therapists, and I just listened to them. I said, what is your experience from the moment you meet a child to the very last meeting or when you feel like you've had a breakthrough? And it was interesting. The one consistent thing that I heard is that they always start with the emotion of the child. They want to know in that moment, how are you feeling?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, interesting, everyone said that. So then I went to Facebook groups of grieving adults, and I wrote the question to all the grieving parents with young children. Do you currently know how your child is feeling? And when you said 70%, that's what made me think of this. 70% came back and said, I have no clue. And a lot of the responses were, I'm so deep in my own grief, I completely forgot to check in on my child.
That is huge. Let's talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But first, it's time for us to take a break. I wonder if our listeners might care to reflect on their own lives if they've experienced loss and whether in fact that's the case for them. But we'll be back right after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston here on UK Health Radio. And we still have our guest with us, Christina Jones. And Christina, before the break, you were talking about doing a survey, and Mark was talking about how when he has talked to people about, you know, are they aware of feelings that other people have, 70% say no. So, Mark, what do you think that is? Why?
Well, I think there's a lot of people who are emotionally shy. So they just don't know how to do it. You know, down deep, they have intentions, but they just don't know how to do it. A few years ago, I actually wrote an article on empathy avoidance. And the idea was that even though down deep people think it's a good idea, you know, one of the real challenges is if you're busy and you're having trouble just keeping up with your overwhelmed life. If you were to say to someone, "How you doing?" you know, which is usually you don't necessarily it's just one of those throwaway terms, but if someone were to say, "Well, if you really want to know, I felt like killing myself over the weekend." You have to drop everything. So you really don't want to know if you're already falling behind with everything. So there's this kind of collective avoidance of not wanting to find out things that would cause you to have to stop everything to attend to it. And you don't know how you're going to stop everything to attend to it. And yet I think over time, it feels like something's wrong. Like one of the things, Christina, that JJ was sharing is that in her community, there was a beloved person whose bakery burned down, and he recently died by suicide. And it's just, I mean, really recently, like the funeral is within the past day or two, and it's just grabbed the entire community. And so I can see that there's a desire. Something I'll ask you, JJ, because you're mm-hmm. in Scotland.
Yeah.
When Princess Diana died, it was the world saw a side of the British Empire, but especially the UK, that had never seen before.
Well, neither had the UK. The UK had never seen that before.
Right. I mean, the outpouring, and I remember Queen Elizabeth II, you know, she was late at coming back to the Buckingham Palace with all the flowers, and I think there was some criticism. You better say something about it.
Yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about that? Because especially that, you know, the UK had never seen that kind of collective grieving.
Yes. I mean, I say we'd never seen it before, certainly never seen it in our lifetimes. I mean, you know, remember we'd come out of a pretty long Victorian era where emotions were suppressed. And I'm guessing that when Queen Victoria died, there was a similar kind of outpouring of grief. Of course, we've had an outpouring of grief more recently with Queen Elizabeth. But with Diana, it was the first time that we'd seen people leaving their homes and flocking to Kensington Palace, Buckingham Palace, to leave wreaths of flowers. Nobody knew how to deal with it. But there was this sense of a country coming together to grieve, which was felt very strongly. And I think I've shared with you before, Mark, that I was a reporter on the day and found myself outside Buckingham Palace with a cameraman. And, of course, everybody was blaming the paparazzi and the media for the death. So we were being called all sorts. I had a guy stick his head out of a taxi cab as he drove past calling us murderers. But the authorities didn't really know how to deal with it. And the press were corralled outside Buckingham Palace. The crowds were massive. I mean, we'd never seen anything like that. We were knee deep in floral tributes. The police wanted to shift the flowers away from the gates. I remember saying to one, I think he was a fairly high ranking police officer. I said, I think if you move these flowers, you're going to have an awful lot to deal with from the crowd here. I really think that's a bad idea. You know, they left them for a while. But there was this sense of a huge outpouring of grief, but everybody acknowledging that with each other, which I think was cathartic. And I felt not the same thing, but something similar here in the community I live in, because we saw the very sad demise of a man who so many people around here grew up with. And he had a business which everybody knew. People used to come from all over Scotland to have a holiday here, and they would always go. It was a fish and chip shop, Mark. And they'd go to the fish and chip shop, and they'd look forward to it. Somebody said it was a national disaster when the shop burnt down. When I walked through the village just as the funeral was about to happen and happening, just seeing all these people walking very solemnly in black through the village to the church. And then as I walked down the high street, I saw that the cafes and shops were closed. And I was just going to the baker's and, you know, thought, oh, right, okay, well, maybe they won't be open. But they were, but the person there was saying, you know, I really feel bad because people want to show their respect. And that's part of the grieving process. And so I think she did sort of, you know, lower the blinds and, you know, show some respect to this person who she'd known all her life. And so I think it's necessary for people to express this grief. And if you're not allowed to express it, and I think this was the issue, you know, people might not be crying, although I was in tears at one point, and I hadn't known the guy, you know, as long as some people around here. But people had to do something to express their grief. And if it meant closing their business for a few hours while the funeral was happening, then so be it. If it meant dressing in black and going to the church and paying respects, then so be it. It's that expression of grief that is so important, I think. And I certainly felt within this community, there's a feeling of a whole community in mourning. And I think you felt that when Diana passed as well. There was the shock because it was too soon. And then this huge outpouring of grief, which had to find a way. And nobody was prepared for it. But we got used to it very quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting. This will obviously date me and Christina. This is just a historical thing. I grew up in Boston. And in the 11th grade, the announcement came in that John F. Kennedy had been assassinated in Dallas. And, you know, and then several years later, his brother, Martin Luther King. And I think it, because John F. Kennedy represented maybe rightly or wrongly, maybe what Diana did, there was a certain optimism and a hope, you know, there was an energy. And it's like in one fell swoop, all the innocence turned to cynicism and darkness and the Vietnam War. And I don't think as a country, maybe a little bit with Obama, we had a sort of a president that provided a little bit of hope, you know, or something positive. I remember when he was elected, there was so much rejoicing, you know, but other than him, it doesn't seem like we've really had people we could sort of look up to and feel great about. And so I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think when I imagine young children going through this, yeah, and even in this conversation, we're all, each of us are doing a little bit of processing. But can you talk about that, Christina? Because a lot of people will hear the term, we need to process something, and it seems awfully abstract sometimes. Oh, I need to process that. So can you give that a little bit of life in terms of what that means to you, and how that can be something that can be, that can help young children to do? Because processing, it seems like if you don't process it, you just run away from it.
Right.
Or you react to it, and then it comes back to haunt you.
Exactly. And in the way I look at it, and the way, you know, studies now are showing, is it's that holding on to toxic stress. If nobody's talking to you about it, if they're not giving a child an opportunity to think through what these feelings are, talk about it, you know, move through it, do art through it, it's just going to sit heavy in a child and just compound. And I'm sure, Mark, you must see it with the line of work that you do, that then turns into something problematic. And so we just talked about, you know, not talking about it. And when I think about schools and how many teachers are taught to talk to a child, a grieving child, it's so minimal. There's only 7% of teachers who have had any sort of training to speak to a grieving child on what's happening, what are they feeling. Yet 1 in 5 children will experience a loss before the age of 18. And I think it's 1 in 8, I'm sorry, no, 1 in 13 children will lose a parent or a sibling, that traumatic death. Yet only 7% of teachers know how to speak openly and help a child process what has happened.
Is that just in the U.S., Christina, or is that worldwide?
Those are U.S. stats. I know 1 in 5 is worldwide. I know 55 million people die every single year, and 1 in 5 children will experience the death of a loved one or someone that they know. Yeah. In terms of how many children worldwide experience the death of a parent or sibling, that stat, we can find it. But
that
I
would
know
be really hard to get, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's can one in 13.
Yeah. Can you talk about activities and how, you know, children often, they don't have a language, they don't have words. And at Guardian Lane, it's really important that you engage them in some kind of activity or play or another way to express themselves. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the whole goal is to release this stress, release these emotions. And with children, play is the best way to do it. And so we rely heavily, heavily on our experts. And again, one of those repeating things in those first conversations was that play, art therapy, movement are the best ways to get children to release, to talk, to share. And so we knew at Guardian Lane, that's all we wanted to do was have activities that can release this toxic stress. And Mark and I talked last week about having tangible things that these children can do and have. So every single activity that we ask our experts to do must have a tangible thing that the children can touch, can feel, can speak to. Because that's so important to get these children talking, releasing, understanding what they're feeling and getting it out so that it does not stay trapped.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. But guess what? It's time for us to take another short break right now. We'll be back right after this with more messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Hurt Less, Live More with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and Dr. Mark Goulston on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast. And our special guest today, Christina Jones. And Christina, I loved what you were talking about before the break. I mean, you're doing such wonderful work, as I've already said, but it's great to hear how you're working with the children. Tell me, what can parents do in this situation? Is there anything practical that they can do?
Yeah, so Guardian Lane was created to give instant access to help. And so teaching not only just the child how to express themselves, but also to have a family conversation. The families can do these activities together in an instant. They don't have to wait for a therapist or a local grief center to have space to be able to see them months later from the moment that they need help. But some of the most practical things are ask questions. Don't just think because your child is silent or has a smile on their face that they're okay. really start checking in. And not just once, but constantly until you start to get that breakthrough. Because we have learned that the one thing children love to do is to not hurt their parent or guardian's feelings. And so they tend to hold it in because they don't want the guardian to cry, to show emotion. But it's important not only for yourself to show that openness and emotion, but to check in with your child and show them and allow them to have that space for them to show emotion too. Another thing is not make this just about the family. Introducing them to other children who have also experienced loss, I think, is extremely important so that they don't feel like they are alone. So there's a few things. On Guardian Lane, we have children who actually submit the projects back to the site if a guardian feels comfortable with their child sharing. And the whole purpose of that is so that they can see, wait a minute, I'm not alone. There are other children around the world who are also experiencing this loss, and we can do these projects together. And also hearing another child talk about it may give them ideas on words that maybe they didn't know were related to healing that they can now accept as words that they can say for themselves. And another way is it provides empathy, that there are other people who experience loss as well. I think another thing parents can do is find a local grief camp. I think that is an amazing experience. And I actually joined the board of experience camps here in the United States. And the reason being is the second I saw it, I thought, I wish I had this. I wish I had something like this, to know that there are other children who are experiencing loss. And it's interesting, you hear the stories from all of these children who are going to camp. And they say, for once, I finally know that I'm not alone, that I have someone to talk to that is in the same position that I'm in. So allowing your children also to have conversations outside of the home with children who have also experienced loss is extremely important. So to kind of repeat that very quickly, ask them how they're feeling. Share your emotions, because then it's important for them to know it's okay to grieve. It's okay to cry. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to have whatever you're feeling. Also allowing them to release these emotions through play, through projects that you can do on Guardian Lane, through your local grief center, allow them to get this out. And then also community, allowing them to find others who have experienced this as well.
Yeah. And I love the idea of camps. We don't really have that thing here in the UK. We don't have summer camps. We don't have, you know, going to camp as a thing. But it sounds like we should do. And if anybody out there is thinking, oh, that's a good idea, why don't you start one? Because obviously, yeah, and it comes back to community. The one thing I felt here in this community was, I think it's important for people to know there is a community around you that understands, that hears, that sees, that, you know, and is there to support you. Which, yeah, very often I think people who are suffering grief and loss think they're all alone, don't they? Especially kids. Yeah.
And that they don't want to burden
someone
talking about it. That's big. But it's important that they know, oh, this person understands what I'm feeling, so I can open up.
Yeah, fantastic. What do you think, Mark?
I think everything she's saying is just spot on. I want to share an anecdote, because this is a conversation. Years ago, I was asked to give a talk to 11 to 17 years old at the Union Rescue Mission in Los Angeles. The Union Rescue Mission is one of the biggest homeless shelters in the country, in America. And I didn't know what I would talk about. The person who did Mondays at the mission said, oh, you'll be fine, just talk to them. And I remember I came into the room, I walked, I went up several floors, and You mainly see the moms there. The dads are, you know, they keep the dads away because it's kind of problematic. And so every Monday, they would go into one of the classrooms, and these would be 11 to 17 year olds. And I remember I was seated behind them when the person who organized this was pumping them up, and he was much more of a motivational speaker. And I'm saying, I have no idea what I'm going to talk to them about. And I had heard the day before at a sermon at a church that I attended, the pastor was talking about someone called Anna Runs America. There was a woman who ran across America to support certain charities. And when he asked her, what kept you going? She said, I kept looking every day like I was a blind person seeing for the first time. So I would notice a palm tree. I would notice, dog poop on the sidewalk. But one of the things that kept me going, so the exercise I did with them is, and I shared that with them, and I said, I want you to close your eyes. And then there's about 25 children in the room. And when you open your eyes, I want you to each talk about something that you noticed that you'd never noticed before. And they just started sharing it. Oh, you know, there's a crack in the wall. The clock doesn't work. There's a pile of DVDs or something. And I said, good. And I said, now what I'd like you to do is I want you to pair up with each other. And you're going to look into each other's eyes the way you just notice something in the room. And I went around the room looking into people's eyes. So I can look into people's eyes like I'm looking into both of yours. And I said, you're going to look into each other's eyes. And you're going to take turns, and you're going to ask the other question. You ask the other person the question, what's the worst thing about your life? And again, I was just making it up as I went along. And within about 30 seconds, the room's crying. And what they're saying is being here. And the volunteers said, what are you doing? I said, I think it's going to be okay. And you could feel the whole room of these children flex into each other. It just flipped the whole room. And then I said, here's your homework assignment. I saw your moms as we came into the room. And I want you in the next day or two to go to your mom, look her in the eye and say, Mom, what's the worst thing about our life? And a lot of them are going to say the same thing, being here. And when your moms do that, I want you to look into their eyes and say, look at me, Mom. And you're going to put your arm around her neck and you're going to say, we're going to be okay and I love you. And I said, for a third of your moms, it's going to be in the top three conversations they will ever have in their life. So I just want to share that with you because it was like, whew, it was kind of crazy. So I thank you for giving me a long leash, but I just wanted to share that because it was kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it's very beautiful, actually. Yeah. And it comes back to the whole idea of just listening and allowing people the space, children as well, to voice whatever is on their minds and also what they're feeling, which mm-hmm. can be really tricky sometimes, unless you're actually given that environment where you can be open.
We have wonderful guests every week, and you've just been terrific, Christina. We had a wonderful guest who just posted recently, Stacy Friedenthal, and she wrote a book on loving someone with suicidal thoughts. You know, how do you talk to them? How do you love them? And I remember one of the things she said, is which I wrote down, I thought was really helpful, is, when you say to someone, you know, how awful is it? You know, what's the most awful thing that's going on? And they tell you whatever they tell you. The question she shared was that you ask them, what's that like? And it goes deeper. And it may enable them to cry. And when they cry, they feel relief. So if you're listening in, by the way, and you use any of the stuff you've heard today or learn any of the things that Christine is teaching all of us, if your children start to cry, don't get nervous. They're crying out of relief that they're feeling it's safe to express this. So that's really important, because a lot of times people say, oh, if I see them cry, it's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Don't chase it away. Try and help it come out even more. So Christina, what are some of your thoughts about what we've been discussing?
I think it's amazing. I think first, with the whole idea of the child going to the mom and the idea of we're in this together, I always love to share that, because a lot of times with a grieving family, you internalize your grief and you think about yourself. But if we can all think, we all went through this together, this is a group effort. So look into the eyes of the people who are also grieving, who are also right there in that moment with you. And like you mentioned, get down. I loved it. Don't ask those surface level questions. Get right down in there to be able to release it all out. And again, a lot of times children may be smiling, may be saying, hey, it's okay, I'm okay, or maybe silent. I hear from families all the time with multiple children, and every single child grieves differently. There will be one child that is feeling all the feels. There's one child that is acting like nothing ever happened. One that is silent and won't talk. And it's like identifying that even though they may not be showing that they're grieving. And don't let it just pass. Dig deep. Hit them down with the question that you, can you repeat that question too?
Yeah, the question is, I give talks on with a friend of mine whose 14-year-old son died by suicide, and he'll talk about everything that he missed. And he has a wonderful documentary. We'll have him on. It's called What I Wish My Parents Knew. And he interviews 10 teenagers who just talk about their low points. And they said, I would never tell my parents. And the reason is a lot of teenagers don't realize that they're triggering their parents to be unempathic. So we talk about, here are five words when we present to parents groups. Here are five words that characterize teenagers: complain, blame, excuses, threats, and moody. And when there are any of this, it triggers you to being unempathic. Well, maybe you should get help. Well, what's that about? It's all going to be okay. And then they're going to think, I shouldn't have told you. And what they don't realize is they're triggering you to be unempathic. And when you watch this movie, parents are mesmerized because they see the pain in the in their children that's underneath their acting out. So we present the video, which we're hoping to do to 500 high schools this year. And then I'll talk, something I'll often bring up is the four prompts. And you do this when you're doing an activity with your child, and it may not work with younger children, but the four prompts, and I'll do it quickly because it looks like we're getting towards the end of the show. So I'll say it quickly. Here are the four prompts. Do it while you're driving or doing an activity. And the first one is, at its worst, how awful are you capable of feeling about your life or yourself? And then when they talk, you pull more out of them. You don't just check a box. The second prompt is, when you're feeling that, how alone do you feel? And you get them to talk about that. The third prompt is, take me to the last time you felt it. And when they describe that so clearly that you can see it as a parent, they're not alone. And then the fourth thing is, hopefully you will have earned the right to eye contact, and you'll say, look at me, honey. And you say, I have a favor to ask you. Whenever you're feeling that way or heading down that road, I want you to do whatever it takes to get your dad or my undivided attention, because there's nothing more important to either of us than helping you feel a little less alone when you feel that awful.
Brilliant, brilliant, Mark. Thank you for that. And we are nearly at the end of the show. Unfortunately, it has been a real pleasure speaking with you, Christina, and Mark, as ever, today. And Christina, just so that people who are interested or want to find out a bit more, they can get you at guardianlane.com, isn't it? Guardianlane.com? Yeah.
Guardianlane.com.
So, and that's Lane, L-A-N-E, yeah?
Correct.
Fantastic. So I do encourage anybody who is interested in Christina's work to get in touch and check out the website, guardianlane.com. But meanwhile, yeah, I'm sorry, Mark, I can't even give you a last word here. You know, we're out of time. So thank you to everybody for joining us. Thank you to Christina. Mark and I have really loved speaking with you today. And if you're listening on the podcast, please like and subscribe and do all those great things and share this episode, because it may well help somebody. You never know. But for now, thank you so much for listening, and do join us next time on Hurt Less, Live More. For now, though, goodbye from me, Mark, and Christina.